Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Tuesday, the 3rd of March. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, the European Commission reviews its response to the Ebola outbreak at a summit in Brussels.
Or we'll be talking about whether the new infections really can be brought to zero, or whether there will be a certain period of time where the disease sort of burns itself out in the area.
And Namibia's outgoing president, Hifikepunye Pohamba, wins the Mo Ibrahim Prize for Good Governance in Africa.
He's got good relations with the opposition. He's not antagonistic at all in the way he operates, and he does meet with opposition leaders quite regularly for consultations, even though his party, SWAPO, has the overwhelming majority in parliament.
Those stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Leaders of Ebola-hit countries in West Africa will attend an international conference in Brussels later today to mobilise a final push to end the outbreak and ensure the delivery of nearly $5 billion in pledges of aid. More than 9,500 people have died of the disease since the epidemic emerged in southern Guinea in December 2013. My colleague Assumpta Lartis asked our correspondent in Brussels, Barbara Wesel, what was expected to emerge from this conference.
I think what the European Union is trying to do is take stock of the situation. That really is the first step. One has seen that the rate of new infections really had dropped significantly over the last 2 months. And then slowly it seems to be inching up again in Sierra Leone and Guinea. Now that, of course, is disquieting. And also the experts are trying to find the causes for that. Is it the coming rainy season, or are other reasons behind that? And then also the experts for disease control are trying to talk about, or will be talking about, whether the new infections really can be brought to zero, or whether there will be a certain period of time where the disease sort of burns itself out in the area. So this first step is very, very important, the stock-taking. Where are we today after so many months of really international measures to contain the disease?
Well, analysts have been blaming the EU for its very slow response to the current Ebola outbreak. There are signs that Brussels has taken measures to react quickly in a future emergence of this scale.
Yeah, I think that is one of the main points. If we come to the question of lessons learned, you know, what went wrong here? And yes, the World Health Organization reacted very slowly, and then the European Union reacted slowly on top of that. So you had like two big international actors who sort of did not really see quickly enough what was happening. And so, of course, I mean, that has been one of the major issues, how to avoid that in the future, how to have different mechanisms. For instance, there is the talk about Germany particularly establishing a sort of quick reaction team of specialists that can go to countries and evaluate what the situation is, and then really rather more quickly get help from the European Union and other international bodies. So that is one of the main points that we say this time it has been much too slow. The next time, whatever comes and whatever the next time will be, another disease maybe or in another sort of catastrophe, reaction has to be much more quickly.
And how sure can we be that the European Union is going to walk the talk and not just talking and discussing about this?
We can never be sure, but of course they're trying to do this. And I think the mistakes that have been made this time really have been acknowledged, that they did not see quickly enough and didn't really somehow recognize the size of the problem quickly enough. And I think really people in the field are quite aware of the situation and quite aware of that problem and will be trying their best to avoid it next time. But then nothing is perfect, and particularly not the European Union.
That was Barbara Wesel in Brussels talking to Assumpta Lartus. In a related development, Sierra Leone's Vice President Samuel Samsumana has put himself in quarantine after one of his bodyguards died of Ebola. He is the highest-ranking African official to date to be in medically imposed isolation since the start of the outbreak. To find out how the citizens of Sierra Leone have reacted to this news, Eunice Wanjuru spoke to Mutala Kamara, our correspondent in Freetown.
Honestly, it came as a surprise to many, you know, for somebody, the second gentleman in the Republic, you know, to decide that voluntarily, nobody's forcing him, you know, to embark on this measure. So he decided voluntarily to put himself under 21 days quarantine. People see this as a precedent, you know, not just for the fight against the Ebola virus in Sierra Leone, but the region as a whole, you know, because you remember when we got this outbreak, places like Guinea and Liberia and are also suffering from, you know, what we are going through. So it has served. So people see this, you know, as a precedent in the fight against the Ebola disease. And the vice president has set a very good example for other Sierra Leoneans. And I think it's a welcome news, and people really, really, you know, appreciate the moves by the vice president. People believe that he will be able to run the country, you know, whilst the president is away under quarantine until the president's return.
Okay, so what does the rise in new cases of Ebola mean for the country? Have the people become reluctant to follow the precaution measures that are being taken to avoid spreading the disease?
The last few days, we have been seeing, you know, the rise of cases, and especially the capital here, Freetown. It has to do with the attitude of people, and there was a report of a particular fishing boat that entered in the western part of Freetown, in a fishing community in Aberdeen, and he was reported to have brought in Ebola suspected case. And so the boat was intercepted and the authorities had to put most part of the Aberdeen community under quarantine. So it has to do with the attitude of people. People are still reluctant, you know, about this disease. It has claimed thousands of lives, but people are still reluctant. It has to do with the attitude of people.
So now that the vice president has been in quarantine, does this mean that heavier measures and restrictions will be taken to fight the virus?
Yes, the president recently announced, you know, before he departed, you know, for the trip to Europe. In fact, during his visit, you know, to that community, which is under quarantine, he said that he has decided to reverse some of the measures that were earlier relaxed. And for instance, the checkpoints, you know, in most parts of the country, they have decided, you know, to bring them back, you know, to do the check-in and also the transportation. Some aspects of the transportation section, which was relaxed. For instance, the drivers were asked, you know, to take 3 passengers from the back for a taxi, for example, and 1 in front. The president said he has decided, you know, to reverse that again, and he is asking all taxis to take passengers 2 at the back of taxis and 1 in front. The same, you know, for the Okada, you know, which is the motorbikes, and he has asked them to take 2 passengers. These are just some of the measures that the president has decided for us to embark on to stop the spread of the Ebola virus and disease.
Mutala Kamara in Freetown talking to Eunice Wanjuru. Welcome to the program. If you've just joined us, you're listening to Africa Link.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Namibia's outgoing president, Hifikepunye Pohamba, has been named the winner of the Mo Ibrahim Prize for Good Governance. He is only the 4th winner of the prize since it was launched in 2007. The $5 million annual prize is not awarded if there is no suitable candidate. This report now from Crispin Mwakideo.
While announcing the 2014 award in a ceremony held in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, on Monday, the Mo Ibrahim Prize Committee said President Hifikepunye Pohamba's style of leadership had impressed the prize committee. Dr. Ahmed Salim Ahmed, a member of the prize nominating committee, said Pohamba has improved the standard of living for his people during his presidency.
He has tried his best to set democratic foundations. Namibia is a small country, but with abundant natural resources. During his time in office, those resources were properly managed. He set an example by seeking to solve social problems, such as the HIV scourge of which Namibia is struggling with. He has also improved the education sector.
For a leader to win the lucrative prize, which includes $5 million paid over 10 years and then $200,000 annually for a lifetime, one must have been democratically elected and have left office in the last 3 years. He or she must serve only their constitutionally mandated term while displaying exceptional leadership. Ahmed says they could not find a worthy candidate for the past several years.
For almost 3 years, we didn't have a candidate because there was no one who fit the criteria. We are always looking for a leader who is a good example for his country, the continent, and especially for young people.
79-year-old Pohamba was first elected president in 2005. He is due to hand over power to Prime Minister Hage Geingob on March the 21st. Geingob won last December's elections by a landslide victory. Election observers say the polls held under Pohamba's leadership were free and fair. Graham Hopwood, executive director of Namibia's Institute for Public Policy Research, IPPR, said he wasn't surprised by Mo Ibrahim's decision to pick Pohamba. He attributed that to Pohamba's inclusive style of governance.
He's got good relations with the opposition. He's not antagonistic at all in the way he operates, and he does meet with opposition leaders quite regularly for consultations, even though his party, SWAPO, has the overwhelming majority in Parliament.
Though Hopwood praised Pohamba's presidency for economic growth and attracting investors to the country, he said the president also had some weaknesses.
We still have major problems with unemployment and inequality, although the evidence is that those have come down to some extent.
President Pohamba, who becomes the fourth African leader to win the Mo Ibrahim Prize, was a founding member of the now ruling Southwest African People's Organization, SWAPO. He and Namibia's founding president, Sam Nujoma, played a key role in the struggle for independence from South Africa.
Crispin Wakideo reporting.
Africa on the move.
The growing demand for housing and office space in the Kenyan capital Nairobi has attracted local and foreign investors to the country's construction industry. However, the industry has a problem with building standards and safety because there has been an increase in the number of buildings that have collapsed. Some fell down during construction, others after the occupants had moved in. Alfred Kitty reports.
The swift economic growth in Africa has led to rapid urbanization, hence the boom in the construction sector. The just-concluded International Trade Show for Construction, Infrastructure, Building and Energy in Nairobi attracted over 60 exhibitors, most of them foreign companies, wanting to set base in Nairobi.
Nairobi and Kenya is on a good way, and we want to help the country to come from this third country image to a developed country. We want to help, and we try our best, and we give our 25 or more year experience to do that.
That was Torsten Lutz, a German investor. Alexander Tono, an international investor too, eyes Kenya as well.
We are a German-based company. I started 10 years ago alone in Dubai. Last year, we set up an office and warehouse in Cape Town, and maybe in a couple of years, also we are here in Kenya.
As the African economy grows, there is need for infrastructure development, but economic growth has to go hand in hand with good infrastructure, says Audes Ikunzo, a representative of a Belgium handling equipment company looking to set up an office in Nairobi.
The problem South Africa is facing now is because the economy moved more than the infrastructure. And if Kenya don't want to face that problem in the future, it's now they have to acting, and we want to be part of this acting.
Even as investors in the construction industry flock to Kenya, cases of buildings collapsing before completion have been a major concern to the stakeholders in the construction industry. Fred Okoth, an editor with the Construction Review magazine, answers the question why buildings are collapsing.
We have so many unqualified contractors in the industry. Materials, we don't use quality materials. That has been a major challenge. Then rush to complete the buildings. Where a contractor is after money, he's rushing to complete so that he can get another job.
The government has been blamed for this mess. Benson Waweru, a Nairobi resident, says.
The solution lies with the government. They have to put strong regulations, because it is the government that approves all the plans and they should supervise.
Kenya's newly constituted National Construction Authority, NCA, is expected to solve this problem facing the industry, given its vast regulatory mechanism. The authority's chief executive officer, Daniel Manduku, acknowledges there has been a problem.
We had a problem where a contractor could be blacklisted with one agency and yet in the other one he has a clean bill of health. So the need to streamline construction in this country so that we have contractors that are professional and, if anything, are regulated.
With the growing number of contractors entering the industry, both local and foreigners, the authority is expected to bring sanity to the industry.
Afrikete reporting. In Uganda, human rights groups have condemned the country's police for their excessive use of force against journalists. Uganda goes to the polls next year, and some analysts believe the government is trying to soften up journalists in advance. In one such incident earlier this year, journalists were beaten up by the police while covering a demonstration. Our correspondent Alex Jitter reports.
The officer claimed the journalist was covering an illegal assembly. Several other journalists were injured in the scuffle and their equipment were destroyed. Andrew Rwanga, among the victims, is now aided by crutches to walk. But much as the police force would like to treat it as an isolated case, politicians and journalists alike feel that the attack could be the ruling party's strategy to win next year's elections. Robert Sempala is the coordinator of the Human Rights Network for Journalists.
We really are scared about what is to happen in the run-up to the 2016 general elections. For sure, this year is an electioneering year where we expect lots and lots of attacks on the independent media. We have seen armed men, especially the police officers, target journalists. This seems like it is condoned by the leadership of the police because those that are at fault are not investigated. No punitive measures are taken.
However, the officer in question was briefly detained but later released on police bond. He is now facing legal action in the courts of law. Cassiano Wadri, a prominent opposition member of parliament, believes government is playing politics, but the plan is to have the media intimidated into submission.
I'm quite sure this is nothing but a well-orchestrated action to send a loud message to the press fraternity that beware, take note that we are capable of doing worse things than what we have done to your colleague. Zip up your mouths, zip up your equipment so that you do not at any one time attempt to bring to the notice and the knowledge of the public what is going on in this country.
The police have denied any deliberate action to intimidate the media. Police spokesman Patrick Onyango told reporters that the force will uphold the law. Onyango also said any police officer involved in the abuse of media rights will be dealt with. But this means nothing to people like Robert Sempala, who are involved in monitoring the media and the way it covers national issues.
The pattern of events in Uganda show that the media is not free. The spaces are being closed down through administrative sanctions, through legislations, threats and intimidation.
Now, a number of non-government organizations have asked the government to allow the media to operate professionally. There are many cases where government has influenced media owners to drop journalists who are seen to be too critical to the government. Much as Uganda has very good laws, the implementation is still weak.
Alex Jitter reporting.
Making a difference.
Rwanda is struggling to contain teenage pregnancy. The government has just launched a campaign to encourage sex education and is appealing to parents as well as to their offspring for support. One concern is that teenage girls tend to neglect their schooling when they become pregnant, and this is difficult to rectify in later life. Flora Kaitesi has more details.
In Kigali's Nyarugenge district lives a 17-year-old girl who is pregnant. A neighbor in this neighborhood is said to be behind the pregnancy. As a result, she was forced to drop out of school.
He used to tell me that he loved me, and because I was too young, I would believe it. One day he came home looking for me, and I followed him to his house. When I got there, he started touching me and had intercourse with me, and I became pregnant. I was forced to drop out of school. I was in senior three in secondary school.
This young girl is among hundreds of girls which the anti-teenage pregnancy campaign hopes to reach. The campaign, which will run for the next 8 months, will be conducted in 90 schools across Rwanda to engage young girls in candid conversations about sex education. Letitia Umutirabura, a family protection officer conducting the campaign in schools in Rwanda's eastern province, says they are trying to instill confidence and raise the self-esteem of young girls.
We are building the moral values of the students so that we can uproot the problem case by case, be it the lack of adequate basic needs or limited parental supervision. We are reminding the parents of their responsibilities to their children so they can better shape their upbringing.
Parents are also blamed for failing to make time for their children or setting a poor example for them during their upbringing. Saidat Nyarukundo and Francois Karemera are parents of teenage children.
Girls need more attention, especially when they turn 12. You need to be on the lookout for who she is interacting with and where she is going and speak to her about the realities of life.
Children mostly imitate bad behavior from older people. Their parents may set a bad example by, for instance, dressing in an indecent manner, and their children copy this, thinking that this is the manner in which things are done.
The 2010 Rwanda Demographic and Health Survey indicated that 6% of girls between the ages of 15 and 19, especially in the rural areas, are teenage mothers. In 2011, over 600 cases of teenage pregnancies were recorded across the country, and many blame poverty for teenage pregnancies, as sometimes perpetrators of the vice use their resources to lure girls into unprotected sex at an early age. Although there are no updated figures on the rate of teenage pregnancy, the campaign has been prompted by rising cases of school dropouts. Umulisa Henriette is the permanent secretary in Rwanda's Ministry of Gender and Family Promotion.
We are urging parents, men and women, and those who prey on young girls to help us so that this campaign can have a positive impact. This is because when the girls fall pregnant at a very tender age, it is a violation of their right to an education, the right to a good life, the right to self-development, and it is denying them a bright future.
Although the campaign has been welcomed by many, some say it will fail if students, parents, school administrators and local leaders do not take full ownership.
Flora Kaitese in Kigali.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.de/AfricaLink. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations, send us your feedback in a text message, and sign up for our newsletter, dw.de/AfricaLink.
And a reminder of our main stories here on Africa Link before we leave you. The European Commission will be reviewing its response to the Ebola outbreak later today at a Brussels conference attended by West African heads of state. Namibia's outgoing president has been named the winner of the $5 million Mo Ibrahim Prize for Good Governance in Africa. And we've also been hearing about a campaign to halt teenage pregnancy in Rwanda. Please remember, we welcome your comments on this program, either in a text message to country code 491609575950. I'll give you that number once again, country code 491609575950, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. As always, thank you for listening. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.